Hi, I'm Ed Greenwood, and you're listening to The Toad.
This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, gbncom.com.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 54. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we will be Forgetting the Realms with Ed Greenwood, brought to you by Sinister Adventures. Welcome again to episode 54 of The Tome. Ed Greenwood at D&D Experience with Jeffrey D. Wynn. I would also like to welcome and thank Sinister Adventures at sinisteradventures.com as The Tome's first episode sponsor. For those who haven't heard, Sinister Adventures is a new gaming company that Nicholas Logue recently started. You may recognize his name because we've talked to him in the past. He's producing large mega adventures where there are multiple plots going on and the characters can choose where to be and where to help, and what they do and don't do will impact the world around them. It's completely non-linear and it's very exciting. The first product is due this summer and it is called Razor Coast. You can expect to hear more about it here on The Tome, but in the meantime, go over to sinisteradventures.com and find their own podcast, Dark Whispers, talking about a little bit about what's going on, or purchase some of the cheap but very well-produced PDF articles over at the Indulgences section. Plans for what's coming up next on the show has been set pretty well for the next 10 or so episodes, and I've got another break coming up in my schedule soon, so I'm hoping that we'll have another blitz of episodes here in about a week or so starting. You're going to hear more 4th edition chatter, more D&D Experience interviews, a Forgotten Realms extravaganza looking at several of the recent Forgotten Realms books that bring us from 3rd edition into 4th, and some possible interviews with the folks responsible for those books, and more of the usual reviews and interviews. So be sure you stay tuned. There's a lot of exciting things coming up. It's also looking like I'm going to get to go to Origins this year, thanks to the help from the guys over at Pulp Gamer. I've never been to a big convention before, let alone Origins, so I'm really looking forward to this, and I'm really excited, and I'm looking for some feedback from you guys on ways that I can make it special. I think I should do something special for the podcast, and I'm looking for your advice and your thoughts as to what odd, unusual, or fun podcasty sort of thing that I could do. So head on over to the forum and let me know. Also on the forum, I'm starting to talk about the Summer 2008 contest. You may remember that last summer we gave away hundreds of dollars worth of game books, gift certificates, and things like that for people who participated in the contest. Well, if you want to have a say as to what people should have to do to enter the contest this year, head over to the forum and give me your thoughts. Well, I've talked much, much longer than I usually do, so I'm going to shut up now and let Jeffrey D. Wynn take us to D&D Experience, where he got to chat with the creator of the Forgotten Realms and so much more, Ed Greenwood.
Right, I have a confession to make. I'm not that big of a Realms fan.
That's okay.
Sorry, but apparently lots of people are. Apparently this Realms thing is very big and very huge, so I just asked around to see if people had some questions that they would like to ask you. So I don't even know if I'm gonna get to these. I'm
just okay, cool.
We're just going to sit here and have a chat. Maybe some of it will end up on the air, and maybe some of it won't.
Okay.
So tell me about these. Tell me about this Forgotten Realms thing. What is this Forgotten Realms?
Well, the Forgotten Realms is called the Forgotten Realms because it's another world, a world in which magic works, and it's vaguely medieval times, and it's one of a multitude of sort of parallel worlds, the multiverse sort of thing. And there were gates or portals in third edition parlance in the D&D game linking all of these worlds. And in the past, real world Earth and the realms were closely linked, which is why there are legends on real world Earth of dragons and vampires and all sorts of weird critters. And then over the years, the way of accessing these gates became forgotten or lost, and therefore the Forgotten Realms.
I see. I heard an interesting story that you had actually started making the realms before D&D ever
That's
existed.
Right.
Why would you do that?
Well, As a kid, I read every book in my father's den, and there were tons and tons of books, okay. All sorts, from wartime mysteries to, you know, the great classics of civilization, Winston Churchill's History of the English-Speaking Peoples and all that stuff, and some really, well, what passed for porn in the 1940s, you know, the nude said no, and all this stuff. And I also particularly love fantasy. And Fritz Lieber, in those days, was publishing the last few Pfaffengray-Moser short stories in Fantastic magazine. I'd already read the sort of the earlier ones, but he was just writing the last few. And the way he wrote them was they were self-contained, standalone fantasy stories that worked all by themselves, but if you happen to pick up more than one of them, or more than one issue of the magazine with the Pfaffengray-Moser story, and you notice they were set in the same world as each other.
No
and
kids.
It sort of built up, and I thought, cool, I'll do that. So I had this...
So you didn't do this for a game, you just did
no,
this for fun?
I did this
for fun. For your own satisfaction.
Sure, because as a little kid, I would always come up to my dad and say, this was really cool, this book, what happened next? He'd say, well, son, if you want to know what happened next, you're going to have to write it yourself. That author's been dead for 30 years.
That's kind of how Tolkien got started.
Yeah.
He was like, I have an idea, I'm going to write it down.
Yeah,
that's
well,
pretty cool.
Yeah, I wasn't, you know, a professor of languages like Tolkien. I wasn't setting out to, but for
what
me...
You mentioned Fritz Lieber. What were some of the literary and also real-world influences on the realms?
Lord Dunsany, P.G. Woodhouse, Rudyard Kipling, Roger Zelazny, John Bellairs.
John Bellairs, I bet.
Okay, but particularly The Face in the Frost. And also, The House with the Clock in Its Walls is the most scary book, you know. An awful lot of the early fantasy writers. Not so much the post-Tolkien stuff, although, again, you know, with the exception of Zelazny. Now I would say Guy Gavriel Kay of our current fantasy writers. Moorcock. There were a lot of people like Clark Ashton Smith. Lovecraft, but not so much the Cthulhu horror as the Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath.
I haven't gotten to
okay,
that. I have read lots of Lovecraft.
Okay, I mean, it's linked to the Cthulhu mythos like everything, but it's primarily Dunsanian fantasy as opposed to horror. And I read all of this stuff, and the stuff those are the things that I liked and that stuck in my head, as well as Fritz Lieber.
How would you differentiate the Forgotten Realms from similar settings of the time, like Greyhawk or Dragonlance? What's the sticking out point? What's the big selling point?
As a game setting, okay, once it came into the world of gaming, the key to the Forgotten Realms is, unlike Dragonlance, which was built around a single story, an epic quest to save the world, and it's sort of like, okay, what do you do next? You know, after you save the world, it's all downhill from here. And Greyhawk, which was started as a sand table wargaming world, and it was, if you look at the very early World of Greyhawk source book, which is it's all this place has this much armies, this place has this many troops, because it's all about
came out of the chainmail system.
Yeah, and I was interested in a world that was incredibly detailed and it was all about everything. The mercantile flows. You know, if you open a wagon in a caravan, say you're an adventurer, and you come across a caravan that orcs have just hit, and they've killed everybody, and carried off most of them that they haven't killed as slaves, and the ones they have killed they've carried off to use as food, and they have no interest in what's in the wagons yet. They'll be back for that, but first, they're hungry. So you happen upon this, and you rip open one of the wagons, and you start very quickly, because you don't want the orcs to come back while you're still there, rip open chest and see what, okay, the chest is going to be full of some trade goods. If it's full of horseshoes, or if it's full of grain, it tells you that the place it came from has more grain than they need and can sell some, and the place they're going to needs grain, has a shortage, or, okay, I needed all those flows in my world. I wanted a world of and you think, who cares about, you know, that? But yeah, I care because I wanted 1,001 stories going on at once. I did not want...
A living, breathing world with its own economic, mercantile system.
I needed to know that the tidal currents, particularly the ones that were shipping currents, I needed to know where the merchants were, the successful groups of merchants. Who was a sort of merchant's cabal? And I don't mean evil guys who wear black robes. I mean merchants who say, oh, okay, we have a little agreement with, you know, Frank over in this city that he gives us a cut rate deal on this in return for that. So if you as an adventurer blunder in, Frank's going to get you because you just hurt his friend.
Okay, so moving on from that, where do like Elminster and the Chosen of Mistra and all these people, where do they come into this mercantile system?
Well,
where do they come into this fantasy world for gamers to
interact? The Chosen of Mistra and Mistra herself and are often misunderstood. They get stereotyped as sort of superheroes of the realms and they're forces for good. They're not. Mistra is the goddess of magic. Her portfolio is to make sure more and more people use magic across the realms. She's not necessarily a force for good. She's a force that works against tyrants who use magic to keep magic from other people. Like, for instance, if you're one of the Zentarim or one of the Red Wizards of Thay, you keep power by making sure you have the magic and the people underneath you don't. So therefore, Mistra is against you because she wants everybody to have magic. So the Chosen aren't so...
She's a goddess of equal opportunity for magic use.
The Chosen aren't do-gooders. The Chosen are meddlers. They go around the realm saying, oh. And of course, this takes care of a common problem in Dungeons & Dragons. You go through this tomb or this dungeon that thousands of people have been into before and their bodies of dead adventurers everywhere, and you open a casket and it's full of treasure. How'd that happen? Did everybody else miss it? Come on. No, what happened is one of the Chosen has been back, and he's put new magic items in for people to find so that more people will get using magic. It's full of scrolls and spell books.
That brings me to like one of the common criticisms that's leveled against the Forgotten Realms is, I can't run a game in Forgotten Realms because Elminster will just show up and save my party. How do you address that complaint?
That's what happens in your campaign is totally up to the Dungeon Master. And most Dungeon Masters don't want Elminster to show up directly at all. Or to show up and be just a complete diversion and sideshow. As you first see Elminster in Spellfire, there's the good guys, the adventurers, and the bad guys. And there's this battle about to go on, and he and Florin stroll right through the middle of it. And they're just ignoring it, and Florin's looking from side to side, putting his hand on his sword. Oh my god, these two groups are just going to slam together with us in the middle. And Elminster's just going, yes, yes, well, never mind. Oh, I see. Poof, poof, don't bother me. He doesn't care. Elminster is off doing something else. And that's the way most people...
I had a second edition box set a long, long time ago. It was just an intro adventure. You were in these caves, and Elminster is just like there. He's got like a dog or something.
Yes.
He's like, did you write that?
No, that was written by Don Bingle, who was one of the...
Like, he's got like a dog.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's how Elminster is. He's just there. He waves to you and then goes off and does his own
thing. Wanders through. Or he was also a way of dispensing unwanted advice to the player characters. Well, you know, if you'd taken the secret door 3 rooms back, you would have gotten out of this. But of course, being blundering adventurers, you just went ahead and killed things, and now, of course, you're going to die. It's just too late. Too bad about that. Boop. And then he's gone. It's like, oh, thanks. But occasionally he would do the sort of wander through the middle of the scene and give you advice that you might not want to take. But if, you know, it was a way of rescuing player characters who, through no particular fault of their own, had done the wrong thing and were going to pay for it. And you didn't want them to absolutely bite the biscuit. So you would give them Nicol Williamson in the movie Excalibur, where he says, okay, at the time the round table is formed, all the knights are like, you know, brawly fighting men, like a football team celebrating in our modern real world.
Sure.
They're all, hey, and he goes, oh, rejoice, be of great gladness. Remember this shining moment. Oh, for it is the doom of men that they forget. And then he walks away in disgust. That's Elminster. He's sort of going, you idiots. You know, here's my piece of advice, and you'll never take it. Damn it. And then off he goes. Okay, and you can use Elminster like that. He's a moment of color. He should not be the superhero who saves the day. He should not be the guy who knows everything and is always on tap to tell the adventurers. Like, you come up and you ask him, he tells you the solution. Oh, you need to use the red key. You know, it shouldn't be like that. But if your player characters have just through blundering gotten themselves into a horrible situation, you can use him. You can use him to, you know, the king is just about to say off with their heads, and Elminster pops in and says, excuse me, there's something far more important. You can execute these stupid adventures anytime. There's something I have to tell you about in that room right now. So come on, off your throat. And the adventurers are going, is this when we can go? And then he turns around and says, if I were you, I'd run like blazes. And then he goes in with the king. And then you go, ah! You
know. So you've answered one pretty common complaint about the realms. There's another one that I commonly see on message boards, which is, oh, there are so many books. There are so many novels, mm-hmm. so many source books. My players know more about the realms than I do. They're going to be correcting me every step of the way. How, you know, I can't run a game in the realms because there's nowhere for me to tell my own story. How do you address that?
Certainly you can. The realms is a vast place. It is full of detail that's about an inch deep because we're covering an entire world. Every dungeon master, they're running a campaign set in their realms. Not my realms, their
sure.
realms. So if they want to use all that detail, it's there. If they don't want to use that detail, then they just make it up as they go along, or they have their Waterdeep be different than my Waterdeep, or their Silver
Moon.
What
if they have an obnoxious play, which is, I read in a book that was written by Ed Greenwood that this guy has a red shirt.
And of course the Dungeon Master says, who's Ed Greenwood? He's not standing there in the street in the middle of Waterdeep in front of you. Are you going to ask someone? Or are you going to believe what you see with your own eyes before the cart runs you over? You know, and then you just gently make it clear to your players that the things they thought they knew because of something they read don't seem to be true right in front of their eyes. Now, that has to be your relationship with your players. Some people sit down and they want to convince their dungeon master outside playing time. Say, you know, like, we read this article and here, you should read it, or we got this source book. It's got everything about Thay in it. And then you read it and you dicker with them. Do you want me to use Thay like this? And remember, your job as DM is to entertain your players.
Yeah.
So if that's what they want and you're okay with it, by all means use the source book, but you shouldn't.
Or else kill them.
Yeah, but you needn't feel obligated to use anything we've written. It's just there if you need it. The whole
sure.
point of, you see, I think that Dungeons & Dragons role players are the most intensely creative people in the world. It is incredibly arrogant of me to say, look, you know, I know better than you. No, no, no. What I'm there to do is save players and dungeon masters in particular time, because they got busy lives full of stuff. If they don't have time to detail a kingdom, here, I did it for you. You know, I actually have the gall, or the company has the gall, to charge you money because we've done all this work. It's just to help you. If you don't want it, don't buy it. And if you don't like something we wrote on page 32, change it. That's okay. It's just there. We did the work so you can spend the work on your adventure and enjoy the game. It's sort
of
like...
That's very refreshing.
It's sort of like knowing that you know, if you buy a car, there's a whole bunch of guys who designed it and will fix it. You don't have to know exactly what goes on under the hood, because somebody else who wears greasy coveralls does. Okay?
Charge you an arm and a leg for that.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, I mean, that's the point. It's there if you need it.
All right, so a bunch of people are upset of that something just happened in the realms called, what is it, the spell plague?
Yes.
Can you tell us, why would people be unhappy about this spell plague?
Well, are you talking people in the real world or
people in
the realms?
People in the real world, and maybe then move on to people in the realms.
Okay, people in the real world might be upset of the spell plague because it's changing something in the realms where they happen to play.
Okay.
Or their adventure player characters were located, or were planning to go, or are on the way to. Or perhaps their player characters worshipped a deity who was going to be destroyed.
Yesterday I was a cleric of Amanantor. Who's that?
Well, that's probably an aspect of Lathander, the Morning Lord,
okay.
the Sun God. God of the morning.
I don't know who that is either. But
yeah.
Anyway, continue on
okay.
with the spell plague.
Well, the spell plague is changing a lot of things very violently, and people in the realms might get killed. Other things
they
that
frequently do.
Yeah, but there's another thing too. If you thought before that the realms was like full of magic and the wizards were running the show, well, now okay, let's put it in real world terms. If suddenly every single person you met in the United States of America who has a gun, like, say, all of the armed forces, or every police officer, and every U.S. Marshal, you know, they're all trained in how to use their guns, and they're trained when to use them, when not to use them. So they don't wander around the street shooting. Yeah, but in theory, they don't wander around the street shooting at random people. Well, what if the guns all started going off by themselves? Then you wouldn't want to be anywhere near anybody in uniform. You know, they come into the street, you'd want to hide. because it could go off at any time. That's what's happened with
sounds
wizards.
Like, sounds like chaos magic. Was it chaos magic or chaos?
Weld magic or whatever, yeah. But that's what's happened in the realms now. So people fear and mistrust all wizards, all spellcasters, to some degree, because they know that magic is bad. Some
so,
people.
So a spellcaster can just be sitting around having tea and he'll randomly cast Fireball.
No. In the past, they think this has happened. They've heard that this has happened in the spell plague. Because the spell plague has sort of happened and we've jumped ahead 100 years.
Okay.
So what I mean is they've inherited this mistrust and fear of magic. It's no longer, oh, here's the wizard, he'll protect us. It's, uh-oh, here's the wizard, he could do anything. Okay? So there's that's happened. And the other thing that's happened in the spell plague is entire kingdoms or lands have changed. And there are people who have been changed in some way by magic.
Hasn't the timeline moved forward
Yeah.
100 years? So humans that you knew in pre-spell plague Forgotten Realms are dead.
They're dead of old age unless they have found some way of cheating time, whether they've been
are some of our favorites still around, like Elminster, Drizzt?
I think you can be fairly confident that Drizzt and Elminster are still around. Whether they're still the same people is another thing.
So and Elminster might be blue.
Well, yeah, or something, yeah. I'm not at liberty to say exactly what that something is at the moment.
You heard it here first, Elminster might be blue.
Might be blue.
Okay.
Now, somebody like Brunor Battlehammer, it will still be alive, but very old. But yes, it does mean a lot of people that you, quote, knew and loved
most
hated.
Most of the humans are probably dead.
Yes. They're gone.
The dwarves and elves and things are probably still alive. What happened to gnomes? Because apparently gnomes are now in the Monster Manual.
Nobody knows. Okay.
Are you going to explain where all the gnomes went?
You'll have to ask the people in the company. As far as I know, the gnomes are still there. You see, what gnomes did, halflings and dwarves learned to live with humans in the cities, and dwarves did it by being the blacksmith, the incredibly useful artisan. Halflings did it by being smart and fast and smooth talker, and they the errand runners and all the stuff. They were clever. They were brash. They were in your face. The sort of teenage rap star who was also the local bicycle courier. That's a halfling. What a gnome did is blend in. He was your servant. He was your quiet craftsman. He's the laundry, the laundress, that sort of thing. The gnomes were sort of, they tried to keep a low profile, whereas the halflings were in your face. The gnomes were just sort of wanted to blend in. So they're still there. They're just not, they're the invisible amongst us sort of thing. They're there, everybody can see them, but they're not making waves. And they're certainly not making waves on a racial basis as a group. They want to blend in on an individual basis.
Okay.
It works better.
Do you have anything about the new races, such as, what is it, the Eladrin and the Dragonborn?
Yes. Okay. Oh, you'll have to talk to the staff members about
that.
I've never been on staff.
Anything about that?
I know about them, but I'm not allowed to say about them because that's still top secret, cool stuff.
Okay. Well, I'm probably going to ask you a whole bunch more things that you're not allowed to talk about.
That's okay.
All right.
Ask me, and I'll tell you.
Are you going to continue working on pre-spell plague realms, books, novels, articles?
Well, I have at least one more novel to come out this coming August, the third Knights of Mithranor book.
And that's actually based on your very first campaign that you ran.
It's called The Sword Never Sleeps. It will wind up the trilogy, and it's set 30 years before the realm's time we reach before the spell plague. So it's way in the past. It's just before Spellfire, way back then. So yes, that'll still be in the old realms. I think after that we will migrate in what I officially write for the company as either game material and novels into the new realms. But I'm still answering lore questions, and I intend to finish the Border Kingdoms that I promised everybody and that started going up on the Wizards website. The Border Kingdoms are in the old realms, per se, what do you call the old realms?
It's just in. There are plans to finish the Border Kingdoms, so everyone can rest easy. The Border Kingdoms will be finished.
And as far as we know, we plan to have that as free content on the Wizard site, not part of D&D Insider. And we'll finish them up. And of course, the Border Kingdoms, you can use them at any time, anywhere, because it's if your adventurers want to rule their kingdom.
You can use any kingdom anywhere in any campaign setting. You can take Cormyr and use it in your own campaign.
Sure, but if your dungeon master didn't want you to get control of Cormyr, and he said, you know, there's no way you're gonna manage it, you know. Nice adventure guy, you're really good, but you can't take over Cormyr. You know, this is a place you can go and kill off some other adventurers who already own four farms put together that they call a kingdom and take over their kingdom. Now it's your kingdom. That's what the Border Kingdoms is.
that used to be a big part of D&D was getting your castle, mm-hmm. getting your not so much anymore.
Mm-hmm. But you know, it's the place where you can go and do that.
All right. I've also been asked to ask you about this thing called Castlemorn.
Castlemorn.
That's another campaign setting you have.
Mm-hmm. Castlemorn. I did with Margaret Weiss Productions.
Okay.
It's still in print. It's a nice huge hardcover book, plus a player's guide that we did before that, Jennifer Brozek and I wrote.
Okay.
Brian Goody is a superb editor, and he helped on both of those things to be the guiding hand to make sure that they're coherent. What they are is third edition or D20.
And will this be updated to 4.0?
I have no idea. Okay. That depends on... the problem is Margaret Weiss Productions is awfully busy right now with Battlestar Galactica and Serenity and a couple of other licenses.
You think they'd be busy with Dragonlance, considering that Margaret Weiss is...
I think that license has now reverted to Wizards of the Coast. But they have a lot on their plate. So Castlemorn is not, you know, at the forefront at the moment. But Castlemorn can be used with any edition of any fantasy role-playing game.
Really now?
Because Castlemorn is a whole bunch of kingdoms facing a bay, surrounded by mountains, so you could put them on Earth, on Kryn. Just what you need is a little hunk of sea that you can dump this little few kingdoms in, this little as a tiny mm-hmm. subcontinent, and it has mists on both sides, which makes navigation difficult, sailing navigation outside mm-hmm. of it, and you can just use it. As you want. It's got a very simple pantheon.
It's a very small plug-in mm-hmm. setting. You can use this and you can put this anywhere.
Yeah, and then like the realms, it's got, I think, six gods as a pantheon. A really tiny pantheon, anyway. I can't remember now because I've two settings in the past for me.
I don't think a campaign setting can ever have too many gods. I don't like the fact that they keep trying to reduce the gods.
No, what I mean is you can put in your own, because I haven't elbowed them out of the way.
You mean a dungeon master can do his own writing and his own work for a change?
Of course! But I mean, the thing is, if we're selling you stuff, we want to sell you stuff where we've done the work.
Sure.
Otherwise, why would you buy it?
You know. I remember like old, like second edition campaigns, like second edition products, you'd like reach the end and it'd be like, here's the first level of a dungeon, now you make the rest.
Mm-hmm.
There doesn't seem to be that much encouragement now in third edition products for the DM and the players to do stuff.
It's just the difference in style. It's sort of like the problem is, if you give somebody a product like that now, there are some people who inevitably say, oh, geez, they couldn't even bother to finishing it. Well, they didn't give me a price break on buying it. They didn't even finish it, man. It's like making me buy a car and they left the back wheels off. You know, so, I mean, some people won't like it that it's unfinished. Myself, as an old-style DM, I always want room. I want them to say, if the player characters do this, why not try this? On the other hand, you might want to do this. You know, and do a big flow chart and have all sorts of cool stuff. That doesn't bother me. But then, you see, I'm a game designer. I'm not a publisher. That might be a really stupid thing to do in terms of profit margins and how much paper you're... I don't know.
I'm not a publisher either, so I really couldn't tell you. I think we got time for one last question.
Okay.
I got this off of a message board. Who would win in a fight, Elminster or Cthulhu?
Ooh, well, that depends on whether you have to fight with tentacles tied behind your back.
It's up to you, sir.
Well, I would say that Cthulhu would probably win the fight, but Elminster would probably not be as destroyed as Cthulhu would think he was. So it would not be the final fight. Elminster would come back.
Pretty hard to destroy well-loved literary characters.
Well, they tend to have this way of just wiping the slime off them and saying, now, where was my tea? Somewhere under this slime, my tea is still here. I'm going to have my tea. So that's Elminster. You see, he just keeps popping up and coming back.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Mr. Greenwood, I apologize to the listeners if this was not as informed an interview as it could have been, but I have thank you for stopping by and talking to me, and I hope you
Hey, my pleasure.
It was
fun.
I
had a great time. It's great fun. I always like talking gaming. Hey, you will listen when I talk about the realms? We can sit here all day.
I would gladly sit here all day, but I think you have something that you're supposed to go to.
Yeah, I
do. More interviews.
Okay.
Well, that's the D&D Experience interview with Ed Greenwood. There are a few more reports to come out in the next few weeks from D&D Experience done by Jeffrey D. Wynn. So keep a lookout for those. Now a quick word from our sponsor, Sinister Adventures, which you can find at sinisteradventures.com.
Excuse me, Captain. How can I get aboard the Sinister Adventures and travel the race coast with you salty dogs?
Why, this is the finest pirate ship ever to slice the briny blue. You can't join our crew without the password.
Is it Dark Whispers?
No, it isn't, you jellified monkey meats. Dark Whispers is our official podcast, and you can hear it on site at sinisteradventures.com.
Did you just call me a jellified monkey meat?
Oh, Sinister Adventures is sailing your way. Not high prices to pay. Buy their fine booty and buy it today. Or fueled by a loneliness and desperation only a sailor can truly know. We'll do brutal things to your farm pigs not imagined on land or sea.
Well, that's Sinister Adventures, and this has been episode 54. Before we close, I just want to say that I am exceedingly glad that the show's first episode sponsor is from a company that I can support so strongly and that I so honestly believe in. Be sure to check them out today. As always, I want to encourage you to send in your emails or audio comments to thetomeshow@gmail.com and send in your feedback. Another great place to do that is on the forum at thetomeshow.com. Also, you can help the show get noticed with reviews on places like iTunes or votes on various sites. But more than that, tell anyone that you know that might be interested about the show. Word of mouth goes a long ways towards helping a show find its audience. Also, don't forget to consider checking out the Tome's Amazon store. The show gets a part of the proceeds, and that helps keep us on the air. You can find most of what you're looking for in D&D books, anything that's been mentioned on the show, in this episode or previous ones. And if there's something that's not there that you're looking for, all you have to do is let me know on the forum or through an email, and I can have it up in minutes. Once again, you can find all of this at thetomeshow.com. Also, don't forget to check out the Tome's partner podcast, Fistful of Comics and Games, at fistfulofcomics.com for all sorts of geeky goodness. Comics, games, video games, that sort of thing. And Gamers Haven at canadiancrusaders.com for some great advice for GMs and DMs. This has been episode 54, Ed Greenwood of
The Tome.